So I'm Matei, and I'm going to talk about stream processing on large clusters. This is a joint project with TD, HY, Scott Schenker, and Jan Stoica from Berkeley. So motivation for this is pretty simple. A lot of large data is being received in real time, and there are a lot of interesting and important applications that people want to do on it in real time. So let me just give a few examples of how people are using large data sets in real time. One of the most common ones is using it to collect sort of user activity statistics. For example, Facebook spent a lot of development effort to engineer this system called Puma, which lets their advertisers and organizations that host a page on Facebook know in real time which kinds of people are going to the page and what they're doing on it, how they're visiting it. And the goal of the system was to process several million events per second with a maximum latency of about 30 seconds. So within 30 seconds of a user clicking something, you see what's going on. Other applications include large-scale machine learning applications like spam detection, or we have a project in our lab on estimating traffic conditions on roads using GPS data from people's cars, and network intrusion detection. And in this work, we're targeting applications that need to run at large scale. So applications that need to run on tens to hundreds of machines and that are aiming for a few seconds of latency. So the challenge with running these kinds of applications at large scale is that you have to take into account two concerns. So one is fault tolerance. The larger the cluster that you're running on, the more likely it is that things will go wrong. Nodes will fail, or even more common, nodes will just go slowly, act as stragglers. So you need a system that can recover from that quickly. At the same time, you want a system to be cost efficient. So you don't want to use many more hardware resources than whatever your application needs for its basic processing. Because at a large scale, you know, if you have to add an extra 50% of hardware resources, that translates into a lot of dollars. And existing architectures for stream processing don't actually give you both these properties at once. So traditional streaming systems, including things like streaming databases or commercial systems such as Storm and S4, are all based on this model of record at a time processing. And the idea here is pretty simple, is each node in your system has some mutable state in memory. And these nodes pass messages to each other for different records. And each time a node receives a record, it goes and updates its state. And it also sends out new records in response to some of the downstream nodes. And you put these into a topology, and you have your streaming applications. But the challenge with this is, how do you provide fault tolerance? And so there are two ways people provide fault tolerance. One way is replication, as shown on the left. With replication, you have two copies of each processing node, and you send your input record to both copies of the topology. And then, you know, they do the same thing in parallel. The other kind of subtle thing with replication is that you need a synchronization protocol between them. This is something like Flux, for example. And this is because the downstream nodes, such as node 3, have to agree on which order they've received records from upstream nodes in. So like, did node 1 send me a record first, or was it node 2? Another way you can do this is upstream backup. That's shown on the right. So in upstream backup, instead of having two copies of everything in the system, you just have one copy, but nodes buffer the messages that they're going to send downstream for a short amount of time until you take a checkpoint. And then if a node fails, you play back the messages from upstream nodes to a standby. So neither of these are really great in terms of the properties they provide. So for replication, you have fast fault recovery, but you have to pay at least 2x in hardware costs to get this. And that's pretty expensive at large scale. For upstream backup, you only need one standby node, but it takes a long time to recover because it has to recompute the state and receive the messages from the upstream neighbors. And there's just one node sitting there and doing that. And more problematic in a cloud data center, neither of these approaches tolerate stragglers. So if you have a node that's slow instead of failed, the replication approach isn't actually going to work because of this synchronization, because the two replicas have to stay in sync to agree on the order of messages. And the upstream backup approach, you can treat it as a failure, but even then it takes a long time to recover. So what can we do to get around this? So our observation in this project is that the batch processing models developed for clusters actually do provide fault tolerance efficiently at low cost. And these are things like MapReduce or Dyad. The way they do it is by dividing a job into small deterministic tasks and having a dependency graph between these tasks. And then when anything fails, when a node fails, you can rerun the task it was responsible for in parallel on other nodes in the system, and so you can recover quickly with the whole cluster participating in the recovery. So our idea here is to run a streaming computation as a series of these very small deterministic batch-like jobs. And what this will let us do is use the same recovery mechanisms, of course, on a much smaller time scale. We're aiming for sort of seconds of latency here. And then it turns into this kind of optimization and system building problem of how small can you make the latency. And you know, as long as we can do that, then we'll be happy. So this is the model we call discretized stream processing. So the idea here is that we'll receive data into the system and we'll split the time into intervals. So here there's one interval for each second. And the data that goes into each interval gets put into a replicated storage system to form this immutable data set. So once that 1 second is over, the data that's received for it is fixed. And this is something we store reliably, you know, we checkpoint it across machines. After that, we run some batch operations, think of it as a mini MapReduce job, to produce derived data sets. And these are also immutable. They're deterministically, you know, defined based on the operation. And they can include program output or state that will be fed back into the next MapReduce job as a dependency from above. And these sequences of data sets going down form our streams. So basically, we're just going to receive this data and periodically run these batch jobs on it. And the one crucial thing to note about the intermediate data sets is we can store them in memory, and we actually don't need to replicate them, so because we know how to recompute them by rerunning the map and reduce functions from before. So that's what gives us the efficiency over replication. So then how do we recover? The way we're going to recover is by checkpointing some of the state data sets periodically. You don't need to do all of them. And then if a node fails, we look back at the dependency graph between the tasks, and we recompute the lost tasks in parallel across the cluster. So in the example here, we have a data set with a bunch of partitions shown as boxes. And say this node fails. Now we lost some of the output partitions of this map function. But what we can do then is each of the other nodes can compute one of the partitions. They don't have to be on the same node. And we can recover the lost data in parallel by having all the nodes take part of it. And what this parallel recovery gives us is much faster recovery than standard upstream backup, but without the cost of active replication of all the data and computation in the system. OK, so this is the high-level idea, is running these small deterministic batch jobs. The natural question then is, how fast can it go? So you know, if you try to run Hadoop, which our speakers this morning said is not a great idea, then it would be very slow to do this. But what we found is that using a faster computing engine, we were able to do these pretty quickly. So we built a prototype on the Spark Cluster Computing Framework, which is an in-memory Dryad-like framework that we developed at Berkeley. And we found that it can process over 20 million records per second on a 50-node cluster at sub-second latency. And this translates into 2 gigabytes per second, which is about 400 megabits per second per node. That's not bad considering you have to replicate the data and you're running on an EC2 cluster. So here are some graphs with the performance of this. We have two applications. There's grep, which is just searching for records that match a pattern, and word count, which is actually a full MapReduce. And the graphs here show the maximum throughput we can get with a given latency bound, either 1 second or 2 seconds. And it's on up to 50 nodes. And you can see, you know, in both of them, it scales pretty well. In word count, it does better if you give it a bit of higher leeway in terms of latency, because it's a two-stage job. So there's more kind of fixed latency. But both of them do work pretty well. The other question then is, how fast can we recover from faults? Remember, we wanted to make that fast. And we found that we can recover from failures and actually stragglers too in less than 1 second. So this graph here at the bottom shows a run of the word count application on 10 nodes where we fail one of the nodes. And you can see each time step of data took about 1.5 seconds to process by default. And this one takes another half a second extra when the failure happens. But then you're back and running. And this is because we parallelize the recovery over the whole cluster. So those are kind of the results in a nutshell. Last thing I'm going to talk about is the programming interface, so you see how you write programs in this system. So we implemented this on top of the Spark system, and basically you have one main concept you work with, which is a discretized stream, or D-stream. And a D-stream is a sequence of immutable data sets that are partitioned across the cluster nodes. We have this concept called resilient distributed data sets in Spark. It's basically a data set that we know how to recompute on failure. And then you have operations called transformations that produce new streams from these ones. So here's what the API looks like. The API for Spark is this dryad link-like API in the Scala programming language. And we use that. We provide a similar API for these streams. And we also add in some new operators that you don't get in say, dryad link, which are for operations that need to maintain state. So for example, a sliding window reduce. So this example here is we have a stream of events of people viewing pages on our site. We read that stream and bucket it every 1 second. And then we do a map and a running reduce to keep a running count of the visitors to each page. And the graph here shows the actual dependencies between the data. So you can see on each time step, we do a map reduce. And then the state, the output of the previous reduce, also becomes input for the reduce of the next time step. So we can keep this running state. And to do fault recovery here, we would checkpoint this periodically, so save it to disk or something. And then we can go and trace back through the graph to recovery stuff. So just to give you slightly more detail what this means. So this syntax here in purple is a Scala syntax for a function literal or a closure. And you can put any Scala code you want in there, and it will be shipped to the cluster. We also have other operators. One other one that we describe in the paper is a sliding window. So in the sliding window, unlike the running one, you only compute over a finite window. So you have to subtract all data as you reach the end of the window. And you do that by also giving it a subtract function. OK. So apart from providing sort of a fast fault recovery and a nice API, there are two other benefits to the D-stream model. So one of them is actually consistency. So it turns out in a lot of stream processing systems today, there aren't guarantees about the consistency of state across nodes. So if a node is backlogged and it's keeping track of a counter, that counter might be sort of minutes behind the counters on other nodes. And the cool thing with D-streams is each record is processed kind of atomically as part of its batch. And the other nice thing is that in the same programming model, we can unify streaming and batch processing. So in our system, you can actually combine streams with data sets that you computed offline through the standard Spark operators and, for example, join them. And you can also connect a Scala interpreter to the system and do interactive ad hoc queries on the in-memory state. And this is crucial if you want to debug something happening in a real application. So, and these are both things that we get essentially for free by building on top of a batch processing engine. We can rely on all of these features. Okay. So in conclusion, D-streams kind of turn conventional streaming wisdom on its head. Instead of focusing on how do you update state on a record by record basis and making the latency of that as low as possible, we group the state into batches instead, and then we use techniques from batch computing systems at the small time scale. But what this lets us do is it gives us the ability to use powerful new recovery mechanisms, such as parallel recovery or speculative execution for stragglers, and have them work for streaming computation. And it gives us a programming model that has the ability to combine streaming, batch, and interactive queries in the same system. And so we're continuing to work on this project, especially to explore the kinds of operators we can add and how small we can really make the time steps. Can we go much below 1 second, for example? We're also going to open source this probably by the end of the summer. So thanks, and let me know if you have any questions.
Hello, this is Marco Serafini from Yahoo Research Barcelona. One question. You said that upstream backup is bad in terms of times it takes to recover a faulty process. Now, if I think of a good stream processing system, I would assume that it's designed to tolerate load spikes. So a failure could be seen as a load spike in some sense. You have some work that you need to get done quickly. Mm-hmm. Maybe more work than expected, but did you try to evaluate exactly how bad it is to use upstream backup in presence of failures?
Yeah, we have. So I think what you're getting at, you said with load spikes, what you're getting at is the system can continue processing new data and take a while to recover from the old data. But we're looking for, we're also considering the application where the user wants an answer immediately, where they're not okay with waiting a long time. Something we are doing now, and that you can also do in some previous systems, is give you an approximate result if you don't recover in time. So you could do that. But I think very few previous systems can actually like recover the computation in a second, even when they're losing sort of tens of seconds of state. Yeah.